I think a photographer knows if they like the light and airy style versus the dark and contrasty. They just don't trust themselves to make that decision. So they just like, oh, I don't know. And they, you know, like start to feel stuck and overwhelmed. Well, or you could just make a decision, go with a style and, you know, try it on for a little while, couple of months, and see what you think, and then experiment and make it fun. This can apply to everything. What if I choose IPS? What if I choose light and airy and I decide that's what I'm going to do? You've got to also, at the time you're making the decision, give yourself the freedom and flexibility to change your mind later and to trust yourself in that decision-making process and the pivoting process.
Hey, welcome to this episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Raymond Hatfield, and today we are chatting with wedding and portrait photographer Heather Lotinen about making photography align with your values. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by CloudSpot, the all-in-one solution for photographers just like yourself to deliver and even sell your photos online. You can grab your free forever CloudSpot account with 10 gigabytes of photo storage over at deliverphotos.com now. So this is Heather's second time on the podcast, and her first interview remains one of the most consistently downloaded episodes. People love it. And Heather has this wonderful ability to break down overwhelm immediately, which is, you know, very easy to feel when you are learning photography. So many new terms and, you know, numbers, all this stuff. Very overwhelming. She can break that down very quickly and then give you a dose of tough love and encourage you to get out there and keep doing what it is that you're doing without wasting any of your energy on all of the unnecessary stuff. I mean, she is just full of pragmatic and efficient information, which I really do appreciate, and I know that you do as well. So today, Heather is back to talk about aligning photography with your values, not the values of what people on the internet say that, you know, you should have, but how can you shoot in a way that best fits your life and your artistic vision? Seriously, another fantastic episode here with Heather. So since it's such great stuff, why wait any longer? Let's go ahead and get on into today's podcast interview with Heather Lotinen. Heather, you know, you're one of the people who, it's interesting from our last conversation when you told me about your background in engineering. When I think of an engineer, I think you have to know the process and then you have to follow it like to a T, right? And yet when I look at you as a photographer and all the things that you teach, there's a lot of nuance in there, a lot of nuance that I would think wouldn't come from the world of engineering. So is that something that you struggled with in the beginning?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was quite challenging. You're so right. So I'm a mechanical engineer by trade, and we have formulas that have answers, Raymond, period. Okay. 2 + 2 = 4. Your Every equation time. Has to balance. And I worked on roadways and bridges. So it was kind of serious because you didn't want them to collapse. So there was absolutely a right or a wrong way to say, build a bridge. Mm-hmm. And then you come into business for yourself. And my thought coming in was, well, I just need the formula. I just need all of the equations. If somebody could just tell me exactly what to do, specifically, I want the right way to do it. Like, don't tell me the wrong way. I would like the right way so that I know how to do these things so that I can execute, make it happen, not fail, get the results, and just keep moving. Okay, I was delusional.
Of course. I mean, did you just fall on your face, or how did you deal with that?
Oh my gosh,
being in an entirely different world.
Yeah, it was so different. And this was 20 years ago when I started my business, so the resources weren't there like they are now. Thank goodness we have the interwebs and so many teachers and mentors and resources like yourself and all of the wonderful people that you work with. But then I just didn't. I mean, I could go get a book at the bookstore on, you know, Photography for Dummies, how to start it. But I decided to take my scientific approach, like just come at it from a different angle, which was, I'm just going to experiment. So I'm going to try. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to pricing, for example, marketing. I don't know how to do these things. So I'm just going to, I don't know, make it up, try something, experiment, and look at it like not as a failure if it doesn't work, but I just gathered more data to make a more informed decision. And so I would just keep trying things until I figured out what worked. And I think what really served me in that regard were two things. One is I had a lightness about it. Like I wasn't going to beat myself up if it didn't work. I was just like, oh, well, of course it wouldn't work. How would I know? So it wasn't failure to me. It was just an experiment. And I just kept, you know, trying those things over and over. And I don't know, I like labeled it as fun.
Really?
So, you know, having, I guess that's the same thing really. It's just like having fun with it and thinking, well, I learned really quickly that there were no photography police because I thought there were. I thought somebody was going to come along and say, you are not doing that correctly, but nobody ever did. So that was great. Then I was free to just experiment and try. And I guess I didn't realize this at the time, but I decided really early on that there wasn't a right or wrong way to do anything. There was just the way I was currently experimenting with. And if it didn't work out, then I would try something else until it did.
Wow. Where does this, were you like this before you went into engineering? Like, were you always open to trying and experimenting? Or because this is a huge mental shift in your pattern of thinking. I want to know, like, when was the first time, like, what was the first thing that you tried and you're like, wow, that did not work at all?
Oh my gosh. Well, if we're talking, there's a couple of things. There's business and then there's like technically just photographing.
Let's start with the exposure triangle, right?
So I photographed my first wedding for a friend and she was fully aware of my skill set, which was like, you know, -2. So I didn't have any experience with weddings. She wasn't going to hire a photographer. I photographed her wedding and I didn't understand shutter speed and motion blur.
That's a big thing.
The wedding was outside. And when it was during the day, it was great. I didn't know this, but night was coming and everything outside got dark and all of my pictures were blur. I mean, they had motion blur, not all of them. A lot of them did because and by the way, this first wedding, I was shooting with a point and shoot camera. Right. It was a Canon PowerShot G3 and you could manipulate settings. It was great for a point and shoot. But I didn't understand. So I wasn't able to change the shutter speed and think to myself, a shutter speed of 1/25th of a second is going to be a problem. No, I was thinking I need more light and it's dark. So, you know, I have a different perspective of that now, 20 years down the road. At the time, I was very disappointed. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't paid for that wedding and she knew, and I still did have this kind of lightness to me of like, well, it was an experiment. I didn't beat myself up over it. I got frustrated and I thought, well, there's something missing that I need to learn. And I remember saying to my husband, people do this. I know they get images that are sharp. I just don't understand how. And then I learned about the exposure triangle and then I got a decent for the time camera and started to learn how to create sharp images. But I think the only way to get there is through experimenting and making the mistakes. Mm-hmm. Because once you make the mistake, that particular one will never happen again. You won't see motion blur from me for the most part. I'm not saying accidents don't happen, but for the most part, I learned that lesson pretty quickly and early on. And then I just adapted and continued to experiment.
So in my head, what happened was you did something, you had a problem, you looked for an answer, you followed that answer, and then you had success. So I would then want to replicate that every single time. I would say, why experiment? Why don't I just look for the answers and then just follow that? But then one thing that I have found in doing so, or hearing from others who have done that, is that then they either get bored of their photography because now it's just like everybody else's, or they get burnt out because there's no sort of creative expression. How do you navigate that? Are you ready to transform your love for photography into profit? Imagine capturing beautiful moments while bringing in a little extra money for your family each month. Sound too good to be true? With CloudSpot, it's not just a dream. Designed by photographers for photographers, CloudSpot simplifies your business. Effortlessly organize shoots, send professional contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and enjoy faster payment payouts with the lowest fees in the industry, including PayPal. Forget lost emails and messy spreadsheets. CloudSpot offers a streamlined workflow, letting you focus on the moment. And here is the clincher. Grab your free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com and you'll get access to my personal wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires. So don't let uncertainty hold you back. Embrace the future of photography business management with CloudSpot Studio. Sign up at deliverphotos.com today and transform your passion into profit.
Yeah, that's such a good point, because what you're saying is like, just tell me how to do this the right way.
Yeah.
And I will do it. But what's right for you may not work for me, and vice versa. So now, in the case of shutter speed, yes, we need sharp images. Or do we? I mean, I have some friends that are incredibly artistic that use motion as part of their art, and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that might not be the best example, but
That's intentional.
Right.
I want that.
Right. No. Yeah. But maybe if we looked at this from through the lens of pricing, where like you're like, I don't know how to price my services, so why don't you just tell me the way to do it and I'll do it. Mm-hmm. The problem with that, as I see it now, is that if I give you that information and it doesn't work, you think this is outside of your control. Like, Heather's pricing didn't work. This must not work for me because I trust her. And she said this is the right way. And then you feel really defeated and completely disempowered, because it was given to you. When you are forced to experiment, you recognize like, oh, this may or may not work, first of all, and you're like, okay with that. And then when it doesn't work, you adjust until you find the way that works for you. And then you have complete ownership and you love your pricing because it aligns with your values, your approach, your season in life, how you structure your business. But again, it's like, is that power coming from someone else, or do you want to like experiment internally and empower yourself to like allow yourself to make those decisions, experiment, and maybe fumble and it doesn't work? I mean, I had no clue. The first person that asked me how much for a wedding, like after the free one, mm-hmm. I was like, I have no, what do people charge for weddings? I don't even know. It's like, would you want to pay $500? And she was like, that's great. And I was like, okay, done. And then, you know, you shoot a couple $500 weddings and you realize, no, nobody gave me that number. I didn't come ask you for that number. Nobody gave it to me.
Straight air. Yeah.
I made it up. I did a few weddings and I was like, this is definitely more work than I anticipated. And $500 is not going to cut it. So I'm going to have to increase that price. But that was like my journey. And I learned, okay, now recognizing that getting a jump start by working with mentors and enrolling in a course, I teach courses. Yes, of course, that's great. But the way I teach now is very different than the way I taught 15 years ago. Because I truly believe there is not a right or wrong way to run your photography business. There are profitable ways. There are ways that are more profitable. But if somebody comes to me with a model, and actually this did happen. Are you friends with Anami Token from This Can't Be That Hard?
Yeah, she's been on the
podcast.
Oh,
she's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. So she has some really unique, she's brilliant, and she has unique approaches to pricing. And I was on her podcast last year and she introduced me to something that I was like, what in the name of Mike? I had never seen pricing like that in 20 years. And I thought it was brilliant. So like, I wouldn't have like known that, you know, you try things, you get information from people, and you make it your own, but there's no right or wrong way to do it. There are just different ways that are maybe more profitable or less profit. Now, if somebody comes to me and says, I don't like my pricing and I'm not making money, mm-hmm. then okay, we need to look at, you know, your structure. But I just feel like as an entrepreneur, isn't the point of having this freedom, being able to structure your business any way you want?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that that's what's so exciting about being a photographer, right? Shooting what it is that you want. There's a low barrier to entry. As long as you have a camera and some way to take some money, you can kind of do it, right? It's when you start to, when you stop playing photographer, quote unquote, and you really start getting into the business side, that it starts to get difficult or challenging, because now there's so many questions to ask yourself. And not only questions, but sometimes doubt. One of the things that I remember very early on when I first moved to Indiana was how different Indiana was compared to California. And I just wanted to take around my camera and take all these photos of just unique things that I saw. But a lot of times I wouldn't, because I was nervous that if I saw somebody else with a camera, then they would want to ask me questions and I'd feel like weird or awkward about it, because I went to school for cinematography, not photography. So I felt a bit like an imposter. But at the same time, I wanted to bring my camera out so that I could take these photos, you know? So how do we deal with getting over the fear of not letting that hold us back?
I was going to ask you, how did you get through that? Because you wanted to take photos, but you were nervous. So what did you do?
I mean, for me personally, it was just, I just had to get over it, because I realized I wasn't getting any photos. But I know that that isn't going to help, you know, a lot of people, and that there's this mindset thing around it. And I just had to realize that people weren't going to ask me a lot of questions about photography. I guess people didn't want to ask me about my camera. I was also nervous that people would get nervous around another camera asking, like, what are you doing around here? Which they never did. But, you know, outside of that, it's still, we can have fears and doubts for a multitude of reasons. You know, how do we systematically, you know, from your brain, get over fear and doubt?
Yeah. Okay. So if you were coming to me with this problem, like in real time, and you were saying, Heather, I'm in this new town, I want to take my camera out, but I'm afraid, I would ask you, you know, what are you afraid of? And you already stated you were afraid that somebody would ask you questions. So one of my favorite things to do with my photographer clients is like play out the scenario. If you're going to hop on that train, let's ride it into the station. If let's say someone did approach you and asked you, like, what are you doing here? Or like, what question do you think would have frightened you?
The most? Oh, man. What question would have frightened me the most? That's a good question. I guess it would be, yeah, you know, the things that are like, what are you doing here? Are you allowed to be here? Why are you taking a photo of that? Did you take a photo of me? Things like that, I suppose.
Okay, so what if that happened? What would you do?
I would try to answer truthfully and I guess try to disarm it, but I would feel weird inside. Hey, Raymond here, and I know that diving into the world of editing can feel like navigating a maze, especially if you're just starting out. So that's why I created our exclusive collection of 52 Lightroom presets, absolutely free. While presets can dramatically enhance your photos, they're not a one-click solution. They're a starting point for your creativity and an opportunity to learn and grow in your editing skills. These presets work seamlessly with all versions of Lightroom, whether you're on a computer or using Lightroom Mobile. And they're designed to simplify your editing process, adding that professional touch to your photos while giving you the flexibility to fine-tune them to your taste. So if you're ready to take your photos to the next level, head over to freephotographypresets.com right now and get editing today.
Because, you would feel weird because you were thinking what specifically?
I wanted to go out and just have like a relaxing day of shooting and, do like this free association of things that come in and just capture these. And now I'm being questioned about the things that I find interesting.
Oh yeah. Somebody's questioning me and it feels uncomfortable and it feels weird. But if they did that, I mean, you're a super laid back, easy guy to be around. I'm sure you would just answer the question. What are you doing here? I'm taking photos. Why? And do you think they would say it like, what are you doing here? Why are you taking that? Is that like what your brain was telling you?
Oh, in my head. Yeah. Every single time. Everybody is super accusatory. Yeah. Yes. I know. It's super awkward. Yeah.
Yeah. Or they might say, hey, what are you doing?
Right.
I mean, like, And then you would just like answer the question. I was working with a client yesterday and she was giving me this big, long, several minute background and about a client asking a question. And I said, well, what would happen if you just answered it? I'll just answer the question. Mm-hmm. You would say to someone, whether accusatory or not, you would answer the question. Oh, I'm new to the town. Mm-hmm. I'm photographing. And maybe they would be like super curious and you'd make a new friend. Did your brain ever consider that?
No, of course not. No. It's always these people are dangerous. They're the worst.
Danger.
They want to harm me. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
When in like reality, after all these years, I mean, I think the most difficult question I've been asked is, why don't you shoot Canon? I'm like, oh, well, and then like, that's it. Nobody's ever really been accusatory, but I know that that's still like a difficult thing. And so is the answer like at some point we have to put on our big boy pants and actually just go out and try the thing?
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. I love that. Just like see what happens, because usually what you're frightened of doesn't ever happen. Mm-hmm. But I really do like to play out worst case scenarios. It's actually one of my favorite things to do. Like, tell me the worst case scenario, because when you play it out and you recognize you can handle it, you just like emotionally armed yourself to behave in a more courageous manner when you do go out and do it, because you know what you would do. It's like establishing a protocol, a way of thinking about something before it happens. Your brain presented you with a bunch of questions, and I'm just suggesting you answer them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like, what if you were new to photography and you were worried somebody was going to ask you about aperture? Like, what does the f-stop mean? And let's say you're not there yet. You don't know it. How would you answer that if somebody asked you and you didn't know?
Oh, I'm not sure. That's kind of one of the things that I always knew. So I guess
I always just knew that.
I just always knew that. Let me think about something else. Like what? Maybe like a question about like flash or something like that, or posing, perhaps. What would I?
Well, how would you answer it if you didn't know the answer?
I guess I'm just trying it out, I suppose.
You would say, I'm still learning.
Yeah.
I have no clue what I'm doing. You know, I was always just like really funny about things. If somebody asked me, I always pretended that I knew what I was doing, like with my body language. But if somebody asked me and I didn't know, I was always very honest. I was just like, I have no clue what I'm doing. Isn't that so fun? I'm just experimenting and I like taking photos, and no, flash isn't my thing. Like, and you always operate with integrity. You're an honest guy. So you would just answer the question. I think the fear is, correct me if I'm wrong, my fear is that I would feel embarrassed that I didn't know the answer.
Of course. Yeah, of course. That's it. So what do you do at that point?
Yeah, well, I'm just willing to feel embarrassed.
Mm.
Like I don't label that as, I don't like it, but I'm willing to feel it. So I don't label it as a problem. So like, I know that you could ask me something today that I don't know the answer to. I could trip over my words and I could feel embarrassed, which is something I do wish to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
But I am willing to feel it. Because I'm willing to feel embarrassed, I'm willing to put myself in situations where I'm not the expert, or I might not know something, or it could happen. Like, I could be embarrassed, but I'm just like, well, what's wrong with being embarrassed? What, I feel a little like weird for a minute and awkward. Okay. That's okay. That's not a problem. No harm will come to me. I always say in my business program I teach, it's called Elevate, I always say, well, did you get mauled by a bear? Like, did you get eaten? No, then you're fine. It's just, you don't like it. And that's fair. I don't like to feel embarrassed, but I'm willing to do it.
So then knowing your personality, are you the kind of person who, once that happens, you feel that embarrassment, you sit with it for a moment, you then go home and research every single possible thing about that so that you never encounter that again?
100% yes.
Really?
Exactly what happens. I will never not know the answer to that specific question ever again. Yeah, because I don't want to feel embarrassed, and I want to know things. I like to learn. So I want to be an expert in the field. So yeah, I will go figure it out and learn it. And then I will, next time someone asks me about flash. That's a really good example, because that's a something a lot of people want to learn, especially like off camera. You know, I'll make sure I know everything about that, or, you know, until, I mean, you can't know everything until a question comes that can't answer. Yeah. And then, you know, and then it just like builds your repository of knowledge, and everybody wins if I'm willing to put myself in situations where I could be embarrassed.
Right. Well, of course, of course. So, we all understand that we have to put ourselves in a vulnerable position just to learn something, right? We have to acknowledge that there's something that we don't know and that we want to know, that we need to know, right? One of the hardest things about photography, as you have seen, and even with off-camera flash and posing and all these things, is that there is no one right way. As you said, there's multiple ways to do all these things. So is the approach learn everything possible and then pick the right one for you, or just learn enough to just move forward with that?
That's a really great question, because I am the type of person that likes to know all of my options so I can pick the best one for me. But that's just not realistically how it works. Mm-hmm. But I do think that people put themselves in that position and then they say, Heather, I'm stuck.
Yes.
And they feel stuck and overwhelmed because they want to evaluate every possible scenario. But that tells me that they think there's a right way. And there's not. So I think you just have to know a little bit, you know, enough to turn on the camera, press the button, turn on the flash, connect it, to then experiment. And the only way, oh, you know what this reminds me of? Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you brought this up. I didn't know early on if I should shoot JPEG or RAW in my career. I understood the difference between the two, but I just wasn't convinced one way or the other. So I decided to shoot an entire wedding season, which for me was between 25 and 30 weddings per year, an entire season in JPEG and the next season in RAW. And then I had 2 years worth of data so I could decide what worked for me. That sounds extreme. Yeah, yes. That's just who I am. So I did that and I determined that I looked at everything. I looked at shooting time, size of cards, backup systems, processing time, delivery, size of files. I looked at everything. And at the end of the day, I opted to shoot RAW for weddings. And I would say I primarily shoot JPEG like for my personal photos.
Same.
And I try to get the exposure as close as possible, of course. But that's just what I decided based on the data I collected. But you could like, you know what another one is? Where do you stand on back button focus?
I love it for weddings. I don't use it so much for personal photos. What about you?
Interesting. Yeah. What do you like? That's interesting. Because the people that I meet, they like love back button focus so much that they use it for everything. So
I find that at weddings, I find a pretty background and I know the photo that I want. So I just kind of stay right there. And then I just have the couple interact within that. And I don't have them move within the, plane of focus. So I just keep it right there because I don't want my camera to accidentally autofocus on the tree or, you know, something else. Whereas with personal photos, it's not as risky to miss a shot. So I just keep it easier on myself. But that's the only reason. What about you? What do you use it for?
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it. And so people are always the people that love it. They're like fanatics about it. They're like, Heather, you have to do this and you have to love it, you know? And I said, okay, fair enough. I will try it because I will try anything and everything just to see if it works for me. And so I didn't try it at a wedding. I was too nervous to do that, but I did try it with, I think I did some family shoots or maybe a senior that year. And I experimented with it and I hated it. It was not working for me in terms of muscle memory. You know, like I just wasn't used to it. And sometimes I would forget to focus. Raymond, I would take the photo without focus. So that's not going to work, you know? And I gave it a chance. And I hated it. And I went back to my shutter button focus. And I did decide that was like another like turning point for me where I was like, it doesn't have to be this way or that way. Like you don't have to shoot Canon or Nikon. There's like no right way to do it. It's just what works for you and gets you the photo that you're trying to achieve. And so like, why would I freak out? And do you remember back in the day we had these, message boards, photography message boards.
Sure.
And people would just freak out on each other about Canon versus Nikon or JPEG versus RAW. Mm-hmm. And I never understood that. I was like, so what? Who cares? Like, do what works for you and so what?
Yes, of course. Well, what's hard is that you know what works for you. And when you see somebody else doing something and they're not doing it in the same way, you're thinking, what are you doing? Like, this could be so much more efficient. Like your friend who told you back button focus is the way to go because they had tried it. They obviously liked it. I guess they just wanted to help you out. But I agree that like the amount of passion that people would have towards something is so ridiculous.
Interesting.
Because of how unique everybody can make their own photography, whether it be their images or, you know, the business side of things for sure. So when it comes to figuring out your style in photography, right? Let's just talk about the style of photography for a moment, because I want to get back to the business, but I was thinking about this. When it comes to creating our photos, we've talked about the techniques so far to this point, the flash, the back button focus, the exposure triangle, all these things, shutter speed. But when it comes to creating images that you like, going back to the beginning of, I see that this thing works from somebody else, let me try to do that. Mm. How do we start to create our own unique voice through our images, our own style, per se?
That's such a great question. A lot of people do ask that, like, how do I find my style? And I think it comes down to experimenting, but before you experiment, you're probably inspired. So like you just said, you see something you like and you're inspired by that. You try to replicate it or duplicate it. And then obviously you're putting your own spin on it. And you're like the difference between, say, light and airy and maybe dark and contrasty, you know, like you're attracted to something, you know, but again, there are photographers who say to me, well, should I do it this way or this way? Like, what's the right way? Mm. And I'm like, what do you like? What appeals to you? I think everybody should be like, hold themselves to integrity for their style, what they like, and just own it. Like, if you like that style, then go for it. But how do you figure that out? I think you have to experiment. You have to find some things that you like, follow some photographers that inspire you, and see how that, try that on. It's like going into a dressing room in a clothing store. You know, you're just like, I'm just going to try this outfit on and see if it fits. And maybe you love it. And maybe you're like, ooh, nope, no way. That's not for me. So you try on something different until you kind of figure out where you fall and what that looks like for you. Like, for instance, some people like a really trendy type of edit and some people like a really clean classic edit. And I don't see a problem with either one of those. It just depends on what you like. I did have a student say to me once, should I adapt? Should I ask each client what they like and adapt to them?
Oh,
and
I did that before. Yeah.
That's, I had a pretty strong opinion on that.
I bet we're going to share the same opinion.
Usually I'm like, oh, there's no right or wrong way. Do it any way you want. And I was like, no way, bro. You have to stick to what you like because nobody would be able to depend on you. How could you like put a gallery on your website that showcases your work if it was always different?
Yeah.
It would not bode well for your business. There has to be a somewhat consistent style because people want to hire you based on what they see. Mm-hmm. And if they see all of these different things, they wouldn't know what they were going to get. So no. I did not think that was a great approach. I personally think that you should experiment until you find what you like and then try to build on that and get more consistent with it. And then I like to say, how can you turn up the volume in your business on your personality and your style so that it's like so unique to you that when somebody sees your photos in the feed, they're like, oh, that's Raymond's photo. Like, I recognize it. I know his style. You know, that's like ultimately what I was aiming for, but it's important to be patient. It's going to take time. That is not something that happened. Oh, yeah. How long did it take you, do you think, to get into that groove of your style?
I mean, a long time. I mean, I've been shooting a long, long time just kind of personally, but I'd say professionally, probably like close to like 4 years, like a long time. Yeah. What about you?
Same years. Mm-hmm. I was going to say it's definitely years. Yeah. I would say, I mean, it's been a while. So it was probably in the like 3 to 4 year range where, maybe even five, if I'm honest, where I finally felt like I hit my groove. Like, oh, okay, this is what I like. Because what you deliver is a combination of your shooting style plus your editing style. So you're having to experiment with both. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I like to shoot? And then also, how do I like to edit? And that combination makes you who you are as a photographer. So like, for instance, I learned pretty early on that when shooting portraits, I love to shoot wide open. So I will go so risky with this depth of field. If I've got a prime on, my favorite lens back in the day was the 51.2 from Canon. Yeah. And I would shoot that sucker at 1.2. Let's go. Okay. It's so risky, you know, but I would get these really cool images and a lot of mistakes, but I like to shoot with a very shallow depth of field. I prefer a very clean, classic edit now, but it took so much experimenting that if I were to show you some of the photos from like the early 2000s with this like Gaussian blur, black and white, green sort of filter from Photoshop, oh my gosh, mortifying.
So at what point did you start to, as you said, put more of your voice into your images to get them to the point to where when somebody saw them, they said, that's a Heather image right there.
You know what it is? It's I started to trust myself. Like, instead of looking to the other photographers in my area, or even all over the world for that matter, to see what they were doing and like, oh, I should be doing this or I should be doing that, I started to feel more confident in my own ability and just trust that the right people would be attracted to my business if I stayed true to myself. Like that if I always kept adapting to what the big name photographers were doing, I just wouldn't have that consistency. So it like I built competence, you know, understanding how to photograph, which led to confidence, which then just like enhanced my self-concept in terms of trusting myself, like, oh, I like this photo and I actually don't care if you like it or not. Like, I like it. For me, this is how I like to shoot. And then I don't know the time frame for this, Raymond. It took years, but I feel like when I really dropped into that belief, for me, that's when my business really exploded.
Of course. I had a similar feeling, I would say. So what do you say then? Because I'm sure that you run into them too. People come to me and they're like, you know, I haven't found my style. Like, I don't know. Mm. I don't feel like I'm creating the work that I want to. I'm having a hard time, you know, making the images that I see in my head. And I want to be a better photographer. You know, how do I start creating these amazing images? And I'm like, great, you know, tell me how long you've been shooting. And like, well, I've had the camera since May. And you're like, oh, well, I understand that you're so excited and you're passionate and you're ready to get going, but it takes years. How do you communicate that to them without discouraging them?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Of course, we want to encourage everyone. We certainly don't want them to feel defeated. So something I like to say when someone says that exact question is, how would you know when you're there? Mm. Like, we can't aim for something we haven't like put a pin on the map. Like, you can't just get on the interstate and just drive willy-nilly and hope to hit a beach or something. You know, you put a pin on the map and you drive there. So like, how would you know when you found your creative, you know? And they'll push back on that and they'll be like, well, I don't know, because if I did, I would be there. And I just then like dig a little bit deeper into, okay, well, what would you have to think when you're feeling like, okay, I've made it. My style is, I like it, you know, I'm always improving, of course, but I feel like I really like my style and I'm there. And, you know, they'll say some version of like, well, I need to like my photos. And then this sounds like circular logic, but it's really not. And it's like, well, okay, what would it take for you to like your photos? And you just, you know, I believe that they have the answer within them, like mm-hmm. that they know, and that it's really just a matter of trust. Like, I think a photographer knows if they like the light and airy style versus the dark and contrasty. Mm. Like, they just don't trust themselves to make that decision. So they just like, oh, I don't know. And they, you know, like start to feel stuck and overwhelmed. Well, or you could just make a decision, go with a style and, you know, try it on for a little while, couple of months and see what you think, and then experiment and make it fun. Like, oh my gosh, you're in this experimental phase where you get to try all of these different styles and see what works. That's amazing, because I'm pretty locked in at this point.
Exactly. Well, again, that's one of the things that I struggled with. I told you that I would ask clients like, how do you want your images to look? Because I thought if I wanted to be the photographer who was competent in many different areas, and if a client wanted something, I would be able to offer it for them, and that would show skill and that would show expertise. But really what it did was just made them complain more often because it wasn't exactly how they saw it. And now, instead of having my own deal, I was trying to make it fit for everybody else. But on the opposite side of that, getting stuck in a position, let's say that you commit to a decision, right? Mm-hmm. I'm only going to shoot light and airy, as you said, instead of dark and contrasty. Then we're locked into that box. That's the photographer who we are. How do we get out of that if we choose later on, oh, this isn't the style for me?
Oh my gosh. Brilliant question, Raymond. And this can apply to everything. What if I choose IPS? What if I choose light and airy and I decide that's what I'm going to do? You've got to also, at the time you're making the decision, give yourself the freedom and flexibility to change your mind later and to trust yourself in that decision-making process and the pivoting process. It is going to happen. There's no, how many years have you been photographing?
11.
Yeah. You're not the same as you were over a decade ago.
Right.
So you allowed yourself at some point the freedom and flexibility to pivot. So I always say, you know, the best thing you can do for your photography and your business is make decisions really quickly, because they're all reversible. So you can change your mind later if you give yourself the freedom and flexibility to do it. But yeah, if you're like saying, I've got to pick my style, it has to be my style from now until the end of time, I have to love it, everybody has to love it, you're putting a lot of unnecessary pressure on yourself to like get it right. Aren't you? I mean, hasn't your style changed with like,
oh, clothing? Dramatically, for sure.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah, of course. I mean,
of course.
And everything.
It's funny. I remember when I was in film school, my buddy who was a director, he was like, "What's going to be your thing?" And I remember thinking at the time, "Oh yeah, I got to figure that out. Like, I got to think about this in the future. What is my thing going to be?" And now looking back on that, like, what a dumb idea that was for me to try to predict the future and then try to lock myself into what that prediction may be for something as unique as a personal preference, as far as like images go. And it was so wild. And what I had chose for myself, I now hate. So imagine if I would have actually, you know, locked myself into that. But it's just a testament to that we don't actually have to lock ourselves in, and everything is reversible to a degree. I mean, just about everything that I've done in my business has been reversible. Is there anything that isn't,
I guess? Okay, I see where you're going with this. So when I teach this in business and in life, by the way, because I think the most successful people I know make decisions really, really quickly because they trust themselves, but they're also not afraid to like make a different decision like tomorrow if they need to.
Yeah.
And I always say, like, I'm not pouring concrete on your feet. You can make a different decision and it will work out the way it's meant to work out. So I thought about that. I was like, is there anything that we couldn't reverse? And I was like, thinking, well, if I went to IPS, could I go back to digitals? Yes. If I shot with this contrasty style, could I change? Yes. Could I do that? Okay. I only came up with like one decision. Okay. There's probably more. Everybody calm down. One decision like in life that's not reversible, and that is having children, because once a human is here, the human is here.
Yeah.
But like, just about, okay, there are major decisions you wouldn't change, like usually who you marry. I get it. That's not the point. The point is, like, looking at business, I could not come up with one decision that wasn't somehow reversible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you think of any?
No, I'm trying to right now. But actually, all that's coming to mind is, it's funny. I think that my son has a, like, it's an interesting fact of the day calendar. And I think the one that he pulled up, this was from a few months ago. I think that Lego originally started out making playing cards or something like that. Or maybe it was Nintendo. Yeah. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, they really pivoted. And if a company like them, who obviously wasn't big at the time, but they were able to turn into something large, we're just photographers. Like, surely we're able to change our minds with something. So that is
what helpful. Do you shoot Nikon or Sony? I can't remember.
Fuji.
Mm-hmm. Fuji, right. That's right. Because I have a Fuji. That's right. Okay. Have you always shot Fuji?
No, it was Canon and then Fuji.
Oh, so that was a pretty big decision. You changed your mind.
It was. Yeah. I did.
What year was that? What led to that decision?
What led to that decision? It was 2016. I had shot a wedding where everybody was so camera aware with the 5D Mark III and the 70-200. Even just the 24-70 was so large that throughout the entire day, everybody would look at me and immediately like, cheese, you know, smile. And it was so fake. And I hated all the photos. And I forget where I had seen it, but I had seen a Fuji camera somewhere. And it was so much smaller. Like, the entire kit was so much smaller that I thought, I like that camera for personal work. I'm going to get, oh, it was the X100 S.
F.
I started with a one, I think two before that. And I had,
okay.
So I had just taken it to a wedding, and throughout the whole day, nobody really looked at me at all. And I was able to get photos that I felt were more true to who the couple were, and they liked the photos more. And I thought, I'm going all in. And that was it. But yeah, I mean, that's a big decision, because my immediate fear was I'm going to show up to a wedding with this tiny, you know, point and shoot camera, quote unquote, and people are, Uncle Bob is going to look at me and be like, wow, like, what are you doing here? And that did happen once. But the guy was such a, you know, he was just a person who wasn't enjoyable to be around, I guess, and at that point, I was much more confident in shooting Fuji,
right,
that it wasn't a big deal. But yeah, even then, I changed my mind and went in a different direction.
And it was totally fine. I was talking to a photographer yesterday who is struggling to decide between Canon and Nikon for a new mirrorless system. And she doesn't have any legacy gear to speak of, really. So she could go either way. And she's so nervous about this. And she's like, pros and cons and doing all these things. And I'm like, listen, they're both amazing systems. You can't go wrong. You will love whatever you buy. But let's say you didn't. What would you do? Oh my gosh. She's like, I don't know. And I'm like, well, you could sell it, right? You could always change your mind. And she's like, yeah, I guess I could. It would be a pain. And I'm like, yeah, sure. It would be a pain, but you could do it, right? Like, release that. That's why you hesitate to make a decision, because you don't think there's a way out, or you don't trust yourself. But what if you trusted yourself and believed that you could reverse it? Well, then, Raymond, oh my gosh, you could make decisions so fast. And I like lightning with the decisions in my business. Like, everything is like, oh, boom, where does the decision need to be made? Boom, go next, do it. I shot Canon the first half of my career, switched to Nikon, like, boom, did it. Didn't even think twice. I shoot Nikon and Fuji both now. Love it. Okay, great. Would have no problem trying something else. Like, so what?
Why did you make the switch from Canon to Nikon?
Because in 2010, I believe this was, I was photographing my kids at Easter with my Canon 5D Mark II at the time. And I was shooting with my 70-200, and I was like, why are these all soft? Like, I'm so sick of soft photos from the 70-200 and 24-70. And by the way, I think Canon has improved light years, and I love Canon gear right now. In fact, I've considered buying it. So this was just like a circumstance of the time. So I decided, this was right when people started renting gear online, like lens rentals and stuff.
Yeah.
So I decided to rent a Nikon D700. That was like their big DSLR at the time. I rented it, and I was like, oh my, that's really nice. So I rented a set of gear for a wedding and had my second shooter use the Nikon gear. I used the Canon gear. Yeah, it was a nightmare to edit, but I wanted to experiment. And I had never seen so many sharp photos from him as I did from that Nikon gear. And I was like, I am done. I took all of my Canon gear. I put it on my desk. I took a photo of it. I posted it on my blog because there was no social media. And no, so it had to be before 2010. Oh, it does not matter the year. It was before that, because it was before social media. And I said, hey, here's like $35,000 worth of Canon gear. What do you want? I just started selling it off. And I bought all new Nikon gear, and I made that decision. Like, it was like, boom, next done. I bought it, and I just moved on learned the system, and it was great.
Wow. Well, you went a different way with that than I was hoping for. But, you know, expectations are just setting yourself up for failure. I guess what I was getting at was there's plenty of times where, because of our experience, maybe we don't have an answer for a question that we have. And there's an important role that community can play in our lives. And it's a great place where we can get information, but also because it can be large, there can be a lot of conflicting ideas and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the role, at least for you, that you see a community playing in helping us evolve as photographers. How do we navigate the vast size of a community and getting all these various different opinions?
Oh, okay. So you mean like if you have a question about a decision maybe you're trying to make and you take it to the community?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to say one thing. Gosh. Somebody's going to say another. Somebody's going to say something else.
Yeah. Know? And here's the thing. It might, and even this is even when you, if you get a mentor or a coach, you know, that you go and you, one of them says you should do this and the other says you should do that. My approach is to like, you know, understand what you want, first of all. And I've just made a decision. I'm not going to crowdsource how I will take opinions into advisement, but ultimately I'm going to make the decision for myself. So I'm pretty sure footed. And I would encourage photographers to like really tap into their own intuition and what they want to do and absolutely ask for opinions. But remember, you get to choose, you know, whatever is right for you. And like, I mean, you get to choose who you listen to. Like if there's somebody that you follow that you really like and respect, then that makes sense. But if there's somebody you follow that's maybe really famous, but you don't align with their values, like why would you take their opinion into consideration? Mm-hmm. I think this is just like, oh my gosh, this is like a theme today. And we didn't even plan for it. It's like coming back to just trusting yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah, get some opinions. I remember I was working with my business coach a couple years ago. And this was an in-person event and we were in a small group. She was asking me about my pricing on my website. And I looked at the other members of my group. It was maybe 6 or 8 people. And I said, what do you guys think about? And I didn't even get it out of my mouth. And she said, Heather, why are we crowdsourcing our business decisions? Mm. Do you really want them to set your pricing?
Mm.
And I said, ouch. I was like, no, I don't want them to set my pricing. And she's like, what do you want to do? What feels right for you? And certainly you can ask for thoughts and opinions, but I really believe that you know the answer, unless it's something technical, maybe like a question about, okay, you know, then there might be like a specific answer for like, oh, how many frames per second does this one shoot or how many megapixels? Yeah. Like, okay, whatever. That's like factual data you can find out. But when it comes to pricing,
yeah,
I think you should just choose wisely the voices you allow into your business.
So then this may be a dumb question, but what role does community have for you? If you want to listen to yourself and not crowdsource information, what value does community bring to your life?
I think there's so much encouragement to be found in community. And I actually enter communities with the thought of like, how can I help and serve, even if it's a community where like I'm one of the students, you know, I'm not talking about me being the coach or the leader. Like I'm in a couple communities right now where I like to see what other people are doing. It inspires ideas. Community inspires creative ideas. You might see something that you wouldn't do, but it inspires something in you. Oh, I could take that, put this little spin on it and make it my own. So I think just having a group of people, a positive, encouraging group of, you know, choose your community wisely too.
Of course.
There are some out there that are
less than ideal,
I don't know, a little judgmental, you know, so like choose your community wisely and encourage one another and use it to like brainstorm and get ideas. And then how can you serve? How can I give back to this community with what I know and so I will sometimes scan posts and like, just like, how can I offer value? How can I help someone? And then there are other people in the group like that. So that when you have a question that you're struggling with, like, maybe you have a pricing question, you know, your pricing, you have it in place, but you're confused because you're, you know, up in your own head about it and you need someone to help sort that out. Community is great for that.
Mm-hmm. I told you at the beginning of this, I was going to try to push you a little bit. And I feel like I gave you a little bit of pushback with that one. But definitely not as far as perhaps maybe you were expecting today. But Heather, You know, I love these conversations that we have. You always come at this with so much positivity and with so much pragmatic advice, you know, which, as you said, you know, sometimes we can get lost in our heads. Sometimes we can be so hung up on, what am I going to name my business? Like, this is going to be it forever. And that's such a difficult decision. And, you know, at the end of the day, as you said, all these things are reversible. If you don't like them, let's learn to experiment and, you know, build the business that you want. So I appreciate your time today and sharing everything that you did. But before I let you go, listeners are going to want to know more about you. And you mentioned your Elevate program earlier as well. Share with us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Elevate is our program for photographers who want to start or grow their photography business. We have members who are just starting, so we help them figure out all of the legalese and marketing and pricing and all that. We have all of the checklists and the worksheets and all the things. But what makes us different is that we know how to help you when none of that works. So you go through the checklist and you implement and it doesn't work for you. We know how to support you with our coaches, and we have something we call lifelines where you can jump on with a professional photographer. So we have new photographers, and we also have photographers who are just now hitting their first six-figure years, which is amazing. So we have our six-figure club inside of Elevate, and we just help people simplify. Let me give you a really easy example. The premise of everything I teach, I'm like, you guys, business is so simple. All it is three steps. You meet people, that's marketing. You tell them you're a photographer, and then you make them an offer. And if something's not working in your business, it's one of those three. Are you not meeting enough people? Are you not telling them you're a photographer? Are you not making them? And we define all of those things. Like, an offer is just service plus price. You know, sure. I like to take really challenging concepts for people that maybe don't have a business background and make it so simple and easy that they're excited to just go out, take photos. Because I don't think anyone got into this business to be stressed out, did they?
Just me. I'm the only one, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, you picked up a camera because it was fun, and then you thought, maybe I can make some money, and that's great. I keep things really, really simple. So meet people, tell them you're a photographer, make them an offer to help. But yeah, in Elevate, we have so much fun. We challenge each other. We have this challenge, for instance, when you first join Elevate, we're like, how can you make $1,500 really, really quickly? Like, we have this one challenge was like, and we have all of these ideas how to go and listen, everything else, the website, the SEO, the fancy pricing guide, all of that is like bonus. That's like fluff. It's great. But if you're meeting people, telling them you're a photographer, making an offer, you're going to get clients and you're going to make money. And then while you're doing that, we'll add all of the things that, you know, maybe make your business a little more holistic. It is so fun. And if you go to flourish.academy, you can learn all about it.
And you know it, I have three big takeaways from today's interview with Heather. The first one is the importance of, you know, having speed in making a decision. I mean, so many times we overwhelm ourselves in making a decision because it seems like this is the only chance that we're going to get, and that we have to make the right decision the first go around. That's why we, you know, look online, we watch all these reviews and tutorials and videos, and because we want to make the right decision now so that we don't have to, you know, experience any possible pain in the future. But making a decision right away, just lengthening that decision, making it a slow decision, is painful in and of itself, because that brings up all the questions and nuances and, all these other small decisions that you have to make that you didn't even think of in the first place. You just want to be able to take great photos. So making quick decisions was one of those big takeaways for me, which leads into takeaway number two, which is trusting yourself. You know, Heather talked a lot about, I think that we know the difference between right and wrong inside, but sometimes we don't necessarily listen to that voice right away. We want to get maybe confirmation from others before we trust that decision. Or if somebody else, you know, has an opposing view, oh man, well then, good luck with, you know, you just lost your entire week because you're going to spend all that time agonizing over the decision that you are about to make. So learning how to trust yourself, not listen to others as much, can lead to, again, faster decisions and better decisions and more confidence in yourself, which is always, you know, it's win-win. It's win-win. And then that leads into the third big takeaway. They all really went well together, which is how important it is to just experiment with your photography. Heather had a 2-year experiment to decide whether she was going to shoot in RAW or shoot in JPEG for weddings. Could you imagine? I can't imagine, honestly, having the patience to do a test for 2 years. I would think maybe 2 or 3 weddings would be enough, but she fully committed to going through the experiment and not changing her mind, not giving up early, but going through the whole thing so that she would be, you know, so that when it came time to make that decision, she would be confident in the decision that she was making. And if she had decided to go one way or another, she would know exactly why she was going that way for her photography, not because somebody on the internet said, oh, we have more flexibility in RAW, but because she knew, oh, when I do it this way, this is better for me, and this is exactly why. So the only way that you're going to get that is to experiment for yourself and find out what works best for you. Now, I got a quick question for you. Do you ever listen to an interview and think to yourself, yes, this is exactly what I need to do? And then you keep listening to the rest of the interview and you completely forgot, you know, what that first thing was. Well, worry no more. You can download a free downloadable photography action plan for today's episode with all of the great information that Heather shared today. And you can grab that for free in the free and private Beginner Photography Podcast community, which you can join over at beginnerphotopod.com/group. Again, that is beginnerphotopod.com/group. That is it for this week. Thank you again. And remember, the more that you shoot today, the better of a photographer you will be tomorrow. Talk soon.
Thank you for listening to the Beginner Photography Podcast. If you enjoy the show, consider leaving a review in iTunes. Keep shooting, and we'll see you next week.